Welcome to Technori Live. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me, of course, Beth Bond.
Welcome.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Oh, I'm just fantastic. Thanks.
I feel like it's been, like a week
a
or something.
A whole week?
Yeah, it's been a week.
Gosh.
I don't know. It's been kind of a crazy week, though. We had freezing weather, we had snow, then we had rain, then we had warm, then we had cold. It's like all over the place.
Yeah, that heat wave yesterday got us like to 68, and then last night was like 27 again.
Got rid of all the snow. Some water was like rolling underneath my car this morning. I walked and literally slipped and flew right on my ass, which I had fallen off a ladder. I fell off a ladder recently and destroyed my shoulder. It popped out, like dislocated. So I was a little bit concerned when I came midway in the air and was like, this is going to be bad. So I literally just like tucked my arms together like this and just braced for impact. And
so like a common occurrence, you already know what position to take before.
You'd be surprised. You know, like in The Matrix and everything slows down. When I get into situations like that, I am able to think like in insane real time. I'm able to like maneuver my not so maneuverable body in
Scott
real time.
Neo Catoon.
That is the first and last of that ever again. So without further ado, we're going to kind of jump into the show here. I'm going to kick it over to Sam for a minute and tell us, give us a prep. What are Beth and I walking into for this show? Because I smell weed.
Oh, yeah, you smell it right now.
I feel like I smell weed. Yeah, I don't.
You're not.
I totally didn't bring anything with me today.
Somebody's. Maybe it's on the phone.
One of the producers leaving.
I smell weed on the phone. What do we got on the show today, Sam?
Well, we got Socrates Rosenfeld. He's the co-founder of Jane Technologies. The actual company that you see is iHeartJane.com, and they allegedly are trying to be the Amazon marketplace for cannabis.
Until Amazon sells pot.
It's a pretty good question, right?
We're going to find out.
They have done their market analysis, I'm sure.
Oh, I have no doubt. I mean, you mentioned it, Beth, when you pop up their map. It's got lots of dots on it.
There's lots of pinpoints in there. Big market.
The cannabis industry is insane. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure. Well, I don't know with what you do with Beth. I'm not talking about your personal life. I don't know what you do when you work with kids and stuff. I suspect that the cannabis Super startup cool. companies is probably not. It's probably one of the most popular startups you guys have.
There's actually a really interesting debate on Facebook mom groups right now.
Oh boy.
Because all the moms are like, you guys, middle schoolers are smoking pot and, you know, all this outrage. And I just kind of like, you know, not a personal narrative, but just said, hasn't pot been around in middle school for a really long time?
Like, yeah,
when I was young, we watched Freaks and Geeks, and you know, it's been.
Isn't that
Wonder
when you
years.
Start pot?
Yeah.
Like we said this last week when Raj Nation was on, he was like, "Isn't STEM school?
Yeah, right.
Isn't getting caught with weed in junior high called junior high? Isn't that?
Yeah,
like, isn't
I
that
just
what
said,
it is?
You know, maybe it looks more prevalent now just because they can post pictures of it on different media channels. But anyways, it was an interesting thing. And then a bunch of, you know, moms chimed in. They were like, oh, yeah, I was a total stoner in like seventh grade. I was like, well, damn.
Is that a word people use still?
But
stoner?
Yeah, I think so.
Hmm. I used to call all the potheads in our school potsers. I don't really know why.
I think you may have been the only one.
That's weird.
I believe I was, yeah. They're a bunch of potsers. I don't know.
Maybe it could make a resurgence.
My big splash, I used to just call it drugs.
Let's ask Socrates what they're calling it on this.
Yeah, we've got Socrates, so let's bring him in and find out all we can about iHeartJane.com. I'm actually pretty interested in this, so I'm going to kick him in now.
Wait a minute, turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play it though. I hope you got in tune. He talking bigger business, he make a lot of moves.
Socrates, are you there?
I'm here.
Awesome.
How are you guys?
I'm doing well. So Beth and I are here ready to learn what iHeartJane is all about. And then we're going to quiz you some questions on it and sort of see what all the smoke is.
I like the pun already.
I know. I'm laughing to myself. Nobody laughed in studio, by the way. Everyone was like, what an idiot.
No, it's great. It's a pleasure to be on your show, and I'm happy to share more about iHeartJane and how we got here.
Go for it.
Cool. So maybe before talking about iHeartJane, I'll share a little bit about my story, since it's a unique one. You guys were talking about consuming cannabis in middle school. I actually never consumed cannabis a day in my life till I was 29 years old.
Oh, no, I still haven't.
I have smoked the weed several times, but honestly, like maybe five in my whole life. I don't.
Got
it's
it.
Not. Yeah. But, you know, before you get into this, you already started with something that is very might be surprising to audience members. But I have found this in interviewing several people from the cannabis industry. Almost every one of them is not a either regular user or ever in their life user of marijuana. which is
well, that's
I find
just what we all say, right?
No, no, but these are like these people, unlike us, are trustworthy. No, but anyway, go ahead with your story, because I think it's unique. It's one of those things where, like, you just found a great opportunity, it made sense, and whatever.
Yeah, if you were to tell me 10 years ago that I would be in the cannabis industry and an entrepreneur at that, I would probably say you're crazy, because I went to West Point for my undergraduate degree in the military academy.
Black
I graduated.
Knights.
Yeah, there you go. Go Army. Graduated there, flew Apache helicopters for a while, was able to go to Ranger School, and then ultimately the culmination of my career was commanding a company in Baghdad, Iraq. And it was a wonderful, crazy time of my life, but quickly decided, you know what, I want to go try and do something else. And at the time, I was 29 years old. Went back to Boston to go to business school at MIT. And the year before, I was fortunate enough to take a year off because I was anticipating that the transition would be a significant one. If you guys, I'm sure you can empathize, if you've ever changed a location or had to move your family, those were all factors in our move. And then also, I was taking off the uniform. And so I wasn't really diagnosed with post-traumatic stress, or I was blessed enough not to have any major bodily injuries. The transition was challenging. It was, if you think about, for most of my adult life, I had been operating at a certain cadence and intensity, and then for me to just suddenly turn that off and integrate into the civilian world was a challenge. And so for me, I was fortunate enough to try cannabis, and it changed my life. You know, all jokes aside, it changed the way I was able to connect with my loved ones. It brought me a sense of balance and well-being again. Mm-hmm. And really, at the end of the day, it brought me a sense of presence and connected me with not just Captain Rosenfeld, Army Ranger, but just Socrates. And from that point on, you know, I was able to go to MIT, got to study the fast-growth technology that shapes this world. And thought to myself, man, if I could ever combine the two worlds of cannabis and technology, it would be a dream come true.
Yeah.
And moved out to California and quickly realized that the way people are used to shopping online for every other item in their life was a very particular way. And that shopping experience wasn't yet available to the cannabis industry. And so my team and I out of MIT decided to fix that and have now created iHeartJane.com. which is the cannabis industry's first and fastest growing online marketplace that allows consumers to connect with any cannabis products local to them sitting on a store shelf at a neighborhood dispensary. And we're excited to see it grow.
So to the comment about it being the first, is this the first legal one? Because I was going to say, like, because the question there is, like, does instant messenger count? Because AOL Messenger or Venmo were the very first I can remember of, like, I would like to consume drugs. You sell drugs direct to consumer.
Yeah, no, we're a little bit more sophisticated than that. If you think about, you know, how you found your last takeout meal on Grubhub, or how you found that documentary you just watched on Netflix, or perhaps that item you found and purchased on Amazon, it was a very particular way. And what I mean by that is, You had the power. As the consumer, you were able to decide what you wanted, were able to compare that product amongst other sellers on factors that were important to you, whether that's price, whether that's what other people were saying in reviews and ratings. And so when you talk about a medicine, largely, that people care about, that everybody puts inside of their body, or the people that consume it, they should have the purchasing power. They should determine whether or not they're getting the right product for themselves at the right price from the right dispensary. And that's what we provide for them.
No, I agree. I'm going to take the jokes aside for a moment here and actually get serious on the technology side of it. Because I have actually spoken to quite a few, not just investors, but folks in the cannabis industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fast growing, as you obviously know. I guess that's my last pun. That's the last pun. Very fast growing.
No, it's fine, man.
But in all seriousness, there is, in almost every one of these sort of, at the time, outlier industries that are, you know, they're dealing with, is it legal, is it not? And there's, like, all kinds of sort of adoption issues that go on. For the most part, they live in a very old-fashioned style. The network, whether the network, whether it's in a store, whatever the case is, it's very sort of like it's treated almost like old-fashioned. We don't apply a lot of the new technologies to it because it's for a ton of reasons. I love the way that you have built this where, like you mentioned, Grubhub and Netflix, because the reality is when you look at the people who are going to be your main consumers, yes, there will be some who use it the right way and the wrong way. There will be some who have used, you know, marijuana in the past in any number of different capacities, but there's going to be a massive, massive boom of people who have never, ever, ever consumed marijuana in their lives, and they need to determine what is the right one, what is the right price, what is the one they need, where do I go, where do I get it, information that's real and is helpful, and they don't have a clue how to search for it and find it. They have no idea. Exactly. So the fact that you curate this information is a massive leg up on almost everybody else who's in the industry who right now is basically point-click search.
Right. And two things on that. One is, you know, this industry is coming out of the dark and into the light, as they say.
Yeah.
Coming from the black market and the whatever cliche
Silk Road.
Say, the stock market or whatever it is. But as an entrepreneur, it's a beautiful situation. If you think about it, you have existing demand, $50 billion that some studies say, that already exists in this country. People are willing to break the law to get this product because it does help them at the end of the day, however you want to define that help.
Yep.
So as an entrepreneur and a tech entrepreneur at that, you have this very unique situation where there's existing demand, but the current landscape in the brick and mortar, you know, environment, in the current technology solutions that are that have been offered for 10 years in this space, is really archaic, in my opinion. And we set out to solve this problem because what a beautiful story this would be. If you think about it, the cannabis industry is the only thriving small business vertical in this country, right? If you think about what Amazon.com has done, they've killed small businesses. No one's opening up a hardware store. There's no local, you know, shoe store in middle America. People are just going online because it's convenient. And I'm subject to that. I order stuff on Amazon all the time. But I always wonder to myself, man, if I'm getting this product, whether it's a toothbrush or whatever, it, I'm a bike helmet, whatever it is I'm getting on Amazon, man, it's so convenient, but I bet you that that product is sitting somewhere closer to me than, you know, getting on a plane in Nashville and flying 2,000 miles to California to get to me. And so we are transforming the way people are looking at e-commerce. We're transforming brick and mortars into what we're calling click and mortars. We're providing the consumer with the same level of convenience that they would otherwise, you know, expect on an Amazon, except now these products are being sourced from a local small business enterprise in their neighborhood. And if, you know, we've patented our technology, our ability to do this. And if we could prove it out here in the cannabis industry, what a beautiful story that would be to say, hey, look at this software, look at this thriving small business enterprise. Could we perhaps bring this to other verticals in retail that are dying, that are trying to compete with the online behemoths like Amazon? We feel we have a solution that can do that. And again, it would be a beautiful story if it was born here in the cannabis industry.
No, I agree. I'm definitely going to need to get permission to steal click and mortar because that I would like to use all the time.
Cool. You know, I had a question just about how you guys navigate the regulation or lack thereof at this point in terms of, you know, providing consumers a way to, I imagine you don't do any sort of like payment processing because, you know, there's no real banking ability there yet. But, you know, do you guys, are you open up to liability when you're connecting consumers with something that is so unregulated?
Right. And we looked at that. And, you know, I think you bring up a great point. There is no standardized national cannabis industry. And, you know, you go to Colorado, they have its own products, its own style of dispensaries, its own consumer base. You go up to Seattle or L.A., et cetera. They're going to be different in each disparate state market. And so when we were looking at it, and this is the beautiful part about software, is that we can go and move into these disparate state markets and be very nimble and very flexible with how our software works. But to the consumer, it's the same exact shopping experience. Whether you're shopping in Denver or Boston or San Francisco, you visit iHeartJane.com, and it's the same consistent shopping experience, except now the products that you're looking at aren't sitting at a warehouse 1,000 miles away. They're actually sitting on a store shelf down the street. And so, also, you brought up a great point about transactions. We don't process any transactions. Mm-hmm. We're really meeting the market where it's at. So similar to how you would order or reserve a table on OpenTable for two on Saturday night at 7 p.m., you could do the exact same thing, except you're just reserving your cannabis products at the store and go in there and pick it up, skip the line, pay for it, and be on your way.
My
places like California, you could get it delivered to you.
My two, which would be awesome. My two questions on this one is, so do you see, you know, I mean, you've spent a lot of presumably money and definitely time building out this platform. Do you see other ways to take advantage of this, like, for example, pairing people with different paraphernalia and different things that they would use that they could pick up, and then you essentially become, I mean, I'm going to say this wrong, it's not concession shop. What's the, where people can bring you, like, the shops that people can have their own arts and goods in, and then you can buy it, and they get confinement?
Consignment.
That's the word. I knew it had in there somewhere.
You're close.
I'm close enough. You're like the online consignment shop for cannabis.
Yeah, it's very similar to that. It's a really interesting place to be because you have the power of technology, but you also have to kind of fit it into this crazy regulatory environment, which, in my opinion, if you can do it the right way, you're going to bear some really creative solutions. One thing we are working on and working towards that we will bring to the market very soon that we're excited about is, again, it all goes back to bringing the power to the consumer, bringing the most education and transparency to the consumer. And so when you go on Netflix, when they say, hey, you know, welcome back, Sock, based on your previous watch history, here are some of the movies that we think you'd like. And I've never even heard of these movies, and I'll watch them. I'm like, man, Netflix.
Is Steven Seagal in them? Or is it JCVD time?
Or like on Amazon when, you know, you're looking for a retail item and you can see, hey, other people who have purchased this or looked at this retail item also look at this. And the reason you keep going back to Amazon is because you trust Amazon. Or you go back to Netflix is you trust Netflix because they're collecting a lot of really rich, helpful data and customizing the shopping experience directly to you.
Yeah.
If you go on our website right now, there's over 30,000 products on our cannabis catalog today.
And you can smoke them all.
Not all of them.
You can eat some of them.
You can eat some. You can even search for CBD honey sticks to stir inside your tea. You can search for vegan-free muffins. My point being is that there's a whole wonderful world out there. You spoke earlier about a demographic that's never tried cannabis. This is a really interesting way to dip your toe in the market, understand what you want, and continue to have all the purchasing power at your fingertips.
So with the kind of data that you're collecting then to curate that kind of experience, are you doing some sort of like post follow-up with reviews and ratings for the different strains that people are trying?
Yes. So that's an excellent point. You know, if you think about what restaurants you choose to shop at or what products you usually buy, it's largely word of mouth. And what we're doing is we're aggregating that word of mouth in the form of reviews. And some of other websites in the cannabis industry, they've incorporated reviews onto their platform, except for the fact that they let everybody leave a review, similar to a Yelp. So I can't, as
there's
a
no
patient,
verification.
There's no verification there. So what I loved about Uber or what I love about Amazon is they verify that only after you've met and gone through a certain gate, meaning you've completed an order, you've gotten a ride, or you've ordered that product, are you then allowed to leave a specific review on that? And that's what we do. So you have that qualitative piece to it, and then all the while in the background, we're collecting some really, really interesting data on how people are shopping for what certain products, and then feeding that back into our system to curate the selection and be that much more customized for that consumer.
My last question I've got for you on this is, and this is a tough one. I don't know. Well, I'm sure you have a general idea, but I don't know what the real angle here is. Again, we're going to stick with the Uber analogy used. When they entered the market trying to do what they were doing, they were sort of simulating what they thought at full steam what this would look like, because the regulatory heavy lifting was so ridiculous that they knew it was going to take millions of dollars in raising to lobby and change the medallion laws in different cities. And then they had to prove validation in one market and then another and another, and then meanwhile fight the battles in New York as they made their way east and so on. And they were not the first, by the way. There was many others that tried and failed. And so the question, this is sort of that hitting in the gut question for you, is as you grow this, pun intended again, when you...
can't help ourselves.
I can't help it. I'm very simple. I'm a simple person. When you start to grow this business, are you keeping an eye on the regulations, and have you made contact with the powers that be and enough individuals from the venture capital world to be able, the moment you see a break point where it goes, listen, we are about to make a shit ton of money here, if and when we can bring the actual product online, and then raise enough money to fight that legal battle, because you're doing a lot of the heavy lifting for the marketplace before, like Uber did, before the other entrants come in and battle with you. And it's just one of those things where I would hate to see you build this whole thing out,
right?
And then
how do you mitigate that?
Yeah, and then have regulation opens, it becomes a free market, and then you're just standing there like, well, shit, I just built something, but what do I do?
Right.
So, you know, what can help you? What do you need to be able to make sure that, or do you not care at all? And you're like, we love that we're doing it this way and that we have the click and mortar, as you mentioned, and it's not a problem. Like, how do you view yourself in that position?
No, that's a great point. It's a really great point. And probably, it's felt here with every single entrepreneur that's had the guts to get into this industry and do the right thing. I will, to build on that Uber analogy, yes, I think they were able to convince governments to change regulation because they had a lot of funding and a lot of money and a lot of lobbying behind them. That's one component.
And it's medallions, not marijuana.
Right.
Fair enough. But at the end of the day, Uber proved, in my opinion, they were brilliant, similar to Airbnb, that there was a huge inefficiency in the market where, again, the consumer did not have the power. Everybody remembers what it was like to get a cab.
Agreed.
Back in the
definitely
day,
agreed.
Right?
Yep.
And there was no power there. And so what happened was prices were locked in, there was no competition, et cetera, et cetera. And I think ultimately that's what changed the government's mind. So from day one, we've always wanted to work with governments, and we do so. We have great support from legal teams and lobbying teams that we work with to understand the regulation and fit our technology to ensure that we are operating within the confines of state legislature. But at the end of the day, we know that in order for us to change, as cliche as it sounds, the hearts and minds of the people who write the laws, we have to prove to them that we can build this the right way. It's not going to be short-term thinking. There's going to be no deception going on. It's all going to be data driven, fully transparent, fully accountable. And what we're seeing is people are respecting that. Customers who want their medicine in a legitimate, accountable way will go to the store, pick it up, and be there. Similar to how people who want to get a table on OpenTable will show up.
Chuck Templeton would love this show.
I was just talking about him.
Plugging the shit out of OpenTable.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know, you talk a lot about the medicine, the use that the majority of users have, it being a medical and sort of thing. And I love the angle, you're a veteran, the statistic of...
Not just a veteran, that's a ranger you're talking to.
Yeah, no, we've got two West Point grads in our family. Also, Socrates, a Naval Academy grad, so we get kind of crazy around Army-Navy.
Hey, at least he got in somewhere, or she got in somewhere.
It's not the Air Force, so that's fine, right?
No Coast Guard in this house.
The country club. No, but certainly there's a great amount of quantitative data that will allow, you know, public policy to be created around usage. So I wonder, you know, I know you're collecting a lot of data, but are people specifically tagging themselves for specific ailments or specific whatever they're suffering from in terms of how it can respond with whatever strain they're getting. Is that a part of that rating and review so that you can use that quantitative data as a part of that, you know, policy push?
That's a great point and an absolute necessity in this industry. We are not a research lab with physicians who can run clinical studies and understand that. So everything that we're collecting from a qualitative standpoint is qualitative at that, meaning someone typed this back pain in and they purchased this and they purchased it again. That's kind of how we're looking at it. With that being said, though, we want to make that data available to the people who want to study this plant, you know, in depth. We want to make this available to doctors. And really, what needs to take place is the drug needs to be descheduled down to at least a Schedule 2 in order for that to take place. And then at that point, there will be, I expect, to be a multitude of studies going to be taking place. And we hope to be in a position where we can offer our data set as a complement to those studies.
And is that one of your pricing models? I just wonder, I know there's a lot of competition with, you know, different local marketplaces popping up all around the country, given, you know, the increase in regulation for medical use or pain usage. How are you guys finding those customers? Are they paying for, you know, a directory listing or a membership fee? You know, how are you getting those users and what's that revenue opportunity?
So, I'm a West Pointer. I like to keep things simple. That's what was taught to me in the Army. And we really want to stand by our word as we're partners in this piece. It's not just iHeartJane.com. And what I mean by that is our success is only driven by the success of the dispensaries. And so we take that seriously. We think our role in this industry For the dispensary, I don't know if anybody's ever worked retail, but I have, and it's not that fun.
Unless
right?
you really love people.
Yeah.
I sold shoes to little old ladies.
Yeah,
I used to sell TVs at Best Buy,
like,
and I would go in the back and take the forklift to the top. This is when they had tube TVs. I would take the forklift to the top of the warehouse during my shift, and I would take a nap the entire time and be like, oh, I was back there restocking stuff. That was retail for Scott.
Right. Time theft. Best Buy.
Time theft. So and real theft. I had a lot of DVDs.
So now think about, you're a retailer in the cannabis industry. You can't get banking. And everybody who comes to you exploits you because they know where else can you go kind of deal. So you have, you know, the Yelp of cannabis charging tens of thousands of dollars a month to these small businesses. In my opinion, it's egregious. So what we said was, cool, our model is, number one, is completely free for the patients, as it should be. Mm-hmm. You don't pay any money to use Amazon. You don't pay any money to use Grubhub.
It's just addictive as shit, and you spend a ton of money.
Amazon.
It helps your life, and it enables that. But so for us, we say, everything is completely free. We charge you when we earn your business, and we define that as bringing an order to your store. Mm-hmm. And for that, we just charge you $1 flat fee. And that's been our model from day one. And that's why we've scaled to about 250-plus retailers in 6 months and haven't lost a single one, because they acknowledge the fact that we are providing for them a best-in-class solution at a very fair price. And you know, we stand by that.
All right, so Socrates, this is normally where we kick the guest out and talk behind their back, but I'm going to leave you in on this because, no, I'm serious, because I want your feedback direct on it. I actually think it's, I like what you're doing, and I just have some thoughts, and if it's totally asinine, and you would know more about this than me, so if you find that I'm off target, then just blast the shit out of me. Virtually, please. I'm sure you have a pretty tight aim, so let's keep it virtual. So here's the deal. You know, first and foremost, to your point way back a couple minutes ago, when we talked about the doing this the right way and that when regulation sort of pavement meets the foot in regulation and it becomes more legal and structured, that you having started this and done it the right way will prove out. I agree with you. I actually think that call it marijuana, call it cannabis, call it money. The government only cares about big time money. They don't care at all about whatever the shit is you're selling. And sure. I look at this and go, reminds me a lot of what we're dealing with right now with the cryptocurrency stuff. Mm-hmm. I am very well. I don't want to say I'm any more expert in that area than anybody else. I'm certainly not. But I have spent a good amount of time with some folks from the SEC in this who actually are working, they've done it, a legal ICO, a registered with the SEC ICO, and it cost a shit ton. It was like $30,000 to process, and the only people who can participate are accredited, meaning they're, you know, millionaires essentially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to, like, the version that they're doing is going to fail, right? And they all know it. But at least in its current form, they all know it. But they know that they were the first, and they're the ones that started the legal structure, which means that when the time comes and it becomes ubiquitous and people are using it, they are the experts and the leader in the field. And that will either mean that they will figure out and raise enough money to catch up and speed ahead, or they will be acquired by whoever does get that money because they have the best possible knowledge and footprint that is available. And I believe the same thing could be said about what you're building with iHeartJane. So to that point, I totally agree with you. And I think the more infrastructure and the more data driven and the more complex you build this, the more legal you build this, the more transparent you build this, it won't matter 1 minute when regulations change if you are the leader in the space from a technology standpoint. So obviously, I know you agree with that.
Yes.
The part where I think could be interesting to me with regard to your business is, you know, you talk about how it's a freemium model. People can come on it. There's a dollar transacted, and you are definitely trying to help the dispensaries. I think that similar to a few other different industries, alcohol is one that comes to mind, where regardless of what happens federally, there will be state regulations that disallow and allow transport of product across state lines, ordering from New Jersey when it's in Florida, et cetera. And so I could see this where essentially your distributors will become those dispensaries, vice versa. So essentially, the places that actually hold all of the marijuana are going to be those dispensaries. Right. And if that is the case, that's probably the next logical step in maturation for this market. Then would it not behoove you to try to run marketing and advertising around funneling as many folks to your site through information and learning about the cannabis field, learning about medical marijuana and its impact and different career stories of people, including yourself, who found this to be valuable, so that you can create something of a online marketplace for these distributors and these dispensaries to market themselves for advertising revenue to you. And then when the time comes and registration, you know, the regulation flips, you've essentially got a monetization platform preset, not paid by the customer, but paid by the dispensaries. Mm-hmm. And then they're also essentially your storage facility, and you just take a cut like you have in the past.
It's the Grubhub model.
Yeah, it's like literally the Grubhub model. Does that something that you're working on? Does that make sense? Or do you think I'm out of my fucking mind?
No. I think the way you've spelled it out is absolutely a course of action that we anticipate taking. It is a course of action. Obviously, regulation in terms of, will banking be allowed? How is the distribution landscape going to, can you mail it across state lines? What can you do? Or can you just kind of deliver it within state lines? Mm-hmm. All those different factions, but you're exactly right. And for us, in order to get there, we need to, and you guys have studied startups probably more than anybody, you got to pick one thing and master it and be the best in class. And for us, we know we're going to pick e-commerce right now and master it and make sure that we are best in class, not only for the cannabis industry, but for every other retail industry and vertical out there. And so when we are there, we will have the customers coming to us. We will have the dispensaries and the distributors coming to us, and the rest will kind of take care of itself. I love your idea about, you know, this is going to be largely a brand heavy play. Brands are going to, if you think of to your analogy about the alcohol industry, you kind of have the micro brews and then you have your Budweisers of the world. I anticipate that shaking out kind of the same way. And what that means is now brands, not unlike their dispensaries in which they sell, are largely small businesses looking to get and extend their online footprint and to reach that customer. And there's no better place than iHeartJane, in my opinion. And we see where the ball is headed, and we're going to run there.
iHeartJane.com, brought to you by Marlboro Green. No, I'm just kidding. Congratulations on the success so far. Thank you, obviously, for your service. We all appreciate it. And thank you for taking the time to kind of play this little game with us. If you need anything in the future, by all means, reach out to us. I think, you know, the cannabis industry is rife for disruption, even though it's not,
right.
You know, a new, it's new, but it's not, if that makes sense.
Right.
So thank you very much for taking the time with us.
Likewise. It was a pleasure speaking to you guys.
Very cool. Thank you, Socrates. Have a great day.
One.
Take care.
Yep.
Bye.
iHeartJane.com. What do you think?
That's a great name. I think there's definitely going to be, and currently is such a great amount of competition out in the marketplace, specifically with the tech play, because that's all anybody can build right now, is a facilitator of a potential customer. So, you know, I just did a quick Google search while we were on the phone, and there are obviously a lot of marketplaces that exist to showcase local dispensary offerings, and they currently cannot process payments as well. So I think, you know, right now the value of these marketplaces is the communities that they're collecting and being able to leverage that data eventually. You know, here in Chicago, we've got Kurt, with Canatopia.
Yep, Canatopia.
And that's an incredible...
He was like the second guest I ever had on a show, by the way.
I know. He's been doing it for a long time.
I am not going to BS you. Kurt's probably going to listen to the show. Hey, Kurt.
Hey, Kurt.
I was a doubter. He came into the office when at 1871 when I first met him. I was like, this guy is all over the place, the cannabis thing. Like, I know, like... you know, I'm like Canatopia, like what? And like, I'm not a pot guy. So like immediately I went and wrote Canatopia with a C, and he's like, nah, that's where you take it. And he goes, and then... And here he is years later. He's still grinding away on it, and things look like they're really looking up for him.
Yeah.
And congratulations to Kurt, because it's amazing to see somebody grow like that, even though I was like, I wouldn't have bet on it. And now I'm kind of thinking like, hey, Kurt, you need a loan?
That's great. Well, I really do think that, you know, it will just be interesting, because right now, just to use the analogy that we did, there's a lot of microbrewers out there doing this sort of thing within the e-commerce or community platform to bring people together that eventually can monetize based on products and processing fees and whatever else. But I mean, definitely a great story. And I'd be interested to see what their medical play is a little bit more, because that kind of data that is showing the effectiveness for treatment is going to be what helps regulate and normalize this kind of service in the marketplace and pass public policy and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, my two cents on this, honestly, is there's a challenge. Like, well, let's start with the good. I like that he's a military person, because not just because of the, you know, service bunker labs and everything else, like it's all good, but like military people understand that red tape and that the government's mostly bullshit, and that
they sure do.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they all come out and they're like, you know what, like, you know, I
can't
fought.
Believe I got paid so much.
Yeah,
for
like,
doing
well, yeah,
so
but they're
little.
Like, but they're like, I fought for, you know, whatever. I signed up for my country and blah blah blah. And then you're like, you find out like midway through it, you know, he served in he said Baghdad, right? So,
well, he went to West Point. He knows how.
Yeah, he knows how it all works, right? Yeah. And so, I think that in order for you to run this kind of business, you can't be jaded, and you also can't be a person who's doing it because screw the man.
And
you know?
I
like,
love pot.
Yeah, and right. I'm like, you just can't. It's got to be someone who recognizes that. That money is money. At the end of the day, the government can say all they want. Yeah, he knows. Yeah, he knows. Right. Sloan, he knows what's up. Like, I just think it's incredibly important that whoever takes this undertaking understands that when you speak the government's language, you continue to use the word cannabis in exchange for absolute greed, and then you'll better understand what you're dealing with. So that's the good. I think he's got all, you know, this is my last pun on him. He's made of the right stuff. Like, he's got the right stuff.
He's good strain.
He's good. Yeah, exactly. Here's the challenge that I have with it. And you know, I think the tech play is the smart play.
Mm-hmm. That's the only play you have right now.
Correct. Yeah. But I also think that there's another play to be made that is not being capitalized, and it may be the Achilles heel. And you brought it up sort of tangentially when you talked about medical marijuana people coming on the platform and using it to learn about health. Mm-hmm. When I think of, and I'm not just thinking that's like with my college brain, but like when I think of a cannabis site, if it's like clinical feeling, it's not going to grow. And if it's like total weed, pot, hippie guy, it's not going to grow. It's got to be a combination of information that's important, but also information that's kind of catches you by surprise, and it's funny, but it's not stupid and it's, you know, it's informational, but it's not like academic. He really has to crush, and I'm not sure he is right now, but he's going to need to. He's got to crush on the branding and really use media as his angle to drive traffic to his site so that he can aggregate and build into that Netflix model. Because right now, the market's not big enough for people to go, enough people to give you enough information to curate a site that would be differentiating than anything else that's out there.
Right. Well, it just has to be one of those like mandated platforms for use.
Yeah.
You know, like for all of the Grubhub restaurants, they point you to Grubhub to order your order online and have it delivered to you. So all of his dispensaries, the 250 I think he mentioned he had, if they are all pushing their customers to pre-order, because that helps them with inventory.
Correct, yeah.
That helps them with all of, if they are mandating usage within their client base or patient base.
Which means he has to incentivize them.
Or and provide them with wonderful marketing materials.
Which he could do now for free. And then once it gets real, flip the switch and start charging on it. I just hope he does that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the one thing that stood out to me in this whole part was, and looking at the site and so forth and the way he described the future of how it could look, it really does come down to creating information that makes these dispensaries more differentiating than even they are. Because, like, at the end of the day, like, I'm not saying that pot's pot, but, like, pot's pot.
Yeah,
and like,
for sure.
Just like beer is beer. Like, I know everyone goes nuts. Like, there's all different flavors. It tastes like caramel. I'm getting hammered. I don't really care what it tastes like. But beer, too.
Yeah, the names are always so funny to me.
Exactly. And so that, to me, is his opportunity to be like, listen, when I have knee pain, I smoke this kind of ganja.
Exactly, right.
And if you can do that, if he creates that.
And I think he's doing that with predictive data, which is great. But, of course, everything that you enter into a registration form or a review form is totally subjective.
Right? Sure.
And everybody, especially for like patient care and pain management, is so different.
But what if he, instead of just relying, like what if the data is not of data yet? What if he used the data to reaffirm suspicions? Like what if he created content where you try to make something go viral that was literally like a video of some little old lady with glaucoma and she smokes this kind
of
weed instead of that.
When my grandma smoked Vox video, right?
Yes.
Where they got all the grandmas together.
But then, like, even, can you imagine even like this really weird, sterile video of like interviewing a bunch of doctors about pod and then be like, well, you know, this strand of cannabis is meant for that.
Yeah.
And like something that's kind of funny for viral internet and going on online and going like with like social media and everything else. But then,
Socrates, shoot us a link if you've
shoot us a link
like that.
Shoot us a link to this because I would love to see something in that vein that then makes people go to the site so that they can comment and sort of Reddit the shit out of all of his stories and different information that you need to know because that's the way I think he's going to get people to clamor to it and then they will adopt using.
Well, and I also wonder what
inbound
the reasoning
marketing.
Is for
is.
Making it exclusively a web platform at this point versus, you know, mobile technology where people are doing one specific thing within the confines of a mobile app.
Like you could argue both sides of that. Like you could see like the wider the .com one cheaper and
I think when it comes to payment processing, that is probably going to be the higher adoption side.
Yeah.
But you know, certainly right now if people are just looking for a place to go and you can link to it from all the different web pages and mobile download isn't necessary, then you know that's a good play. But eventually if payment processing and delivery is a part of this to track orders, like it's going to have to be a mobile app.
Yeah, you're right. That's actually a really good point. You could imagine how he could turn this into an app to simplify the experience so that you're like pop up my app to see like what kind of stuff
me.
I want.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
I'm near a dispensary. Uh-huh. Here's all. I hope you're listening, Socrates.
I'm sure that's on their roadmap.
No, absolutely. Very interesting stuff. So thank you, Beth, for joining us on that interview. And then we've got a couple minutes left here. I wanted to kind of catch up with you and see what all is going on in your neck of the woods.
What's going on? You know, it's really cool. There's obviously Chicago's got so much in play right now. HQ2 potential. But I think one of the things that I'm really excited about is when government does anything.
Yeah. Which is also why we probably won't get HQ2.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll see. I've heard that the pitch video will make you cry.
But will it make you buy? That's the question.
But will it make you buy, right? But one of the things, you know, we've got such an incredible force over at the city clerk's office. You know, their team is young and hungry and preceded by Susanna's office, which was very similar. And I think they removed a lot of barriers to implementing technology. But one of the things that's super cool is they've got a pilot going on right now for the City Key. So you too can be a city key holder.
Do you really want me to have a city key?
I think I feel so.
Like, I think that's
do
a huge mistake.
Do you want to have a city key?
Of course I do.
So, no, what they've actually done is they've bundled one ID card with your venture card, a public library card, and they've got a really cool affiliate perk program that's going to be launching soon. But this is, they're in their pilot phase for this, and one of the really compelling things, because, you know, there's nothing like the government just doing something to do something, and they get $1 million or whatever it is to roll out a program that potentially we didn't really need. But what's really cool about this City Key program is it actually is a city ID or a government regulated ID card that undocumented citizens can use, which is so important in like this state of the union where ICE raids are happening all the time, and people need some sort of documentation to prove some sort of legal status. So this is such a great way to fix that. And their office has been rolling this out. I think they have about 150 pilot users of it and still looking for more signups. So come on, Scott, get on.
Very cool.
But yeah, so just exciting to see what we're doing at a government level to implement technology to, you know, alleviate a couple of pains.
I feel like you're the only person that I know that I could have asked that question and gotten like 5 good minutes out of.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody.
There's a lot more. We'll do more next week.
I think to that point, we need to do more of this kind of stuff because I think people need to know more. Do you talk to people on the street and you're like, oh, do you know this? It's like you said, when you said Susan, did you mean Mendoza?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, I don't think the average person listening to this put that together.
Yeah.
That means they don't know a lot.
Sure. Well, you know, I just also happen to have been a part of like civic engagement tech in Chicago for 7 years, probably longer than most people have known about civic engagement technology.
Or Chicago tech at all.
Or Chicago tech at all. So, no, there's so much happening across the city that is like social good focused and would make you super happy compared to the kind of shit that we have to see run across the 24-hour news cycle here.
Yeah,
anyway,
good.
So, you know, I'm excited about just bringing awareness to all of that good because
awesome.
There's a lot of it.
Well, I'm going to tell you, we're going to kick over to Sam for a second here because this is where we want to find out what not to call you an average Joe. I'm not saying you're average Joe. We'd like to know what people might have conceptually learned from our random rantings on the show. So Sam, is there anything about this show that you learned anything? You can say I learned not a fucking thing and it's fine.
Well, I won't sleep on it this time.
Yeah. Last time we did not, it was not part of the track, but we kicked over to Sam to say, Sam, what are your thoughts on this? And
thoughts?
His response was, well, usually I like to sleep on my thoughts. And I was like, well, on a live program, that's kind of a problem.
Well, I mean, just from the interview that we just had with Socrates, I think you heard him. Oh, wow. I can actually hear my voice now.
Yeah. It's because you weren't recording before.
Well, anyway, so
you sound great.
From the interview that we just had with Socrates, I you were making a lot of like the like cliche jokes about cannabis.
For only a moment though. Then I got serious, right. Then I got off
well,
again.
You went like 5 more times.
He kind of took it in stride,
how
right?
Can
like,
you
he's taking in stride.
Well, he
like,
marches for a living. He used to.
All the cliches and all the stereotypes that go with
cliche.
The drug.
Yeah.
And he kind of like beat it down to you understood that like, it's a business and this is legitimate, and that's how they're changing the perception of cannabis, and that's really like how they're winning this, you know, war on drugs, if you will, and how it's probably gonna get legalized at some point.
Are you a pothead?
No, I'm not gonna disclose my personal life with you, Scott.
You have to be piss tested, so yeah. I'm just kidding.
I'm about to go to Vegas, and it's legal there. So I'm...
well, there you go.
Yeah,
lots of stuff in Vegas
was
is legal.
Crazy. It was just like everywhere.
Yeah, it's nuts. Well, that's good. That's interesting. I agree. I do this with some guests. I try to beat them into submission a little bit with their stuff because
hard to do that to an Army Ranger.
Well, yeah, that's not ever going to happen. He would grab me by my throat across the phone line. Yeah, right through the microphone. I just get Socratesed. But the reality is people still don't take the industry serious.
Right.
Just don't. Like, there are mothers across the country going, oh, that's pot, man. Like, that's not what all mothers sound like, but some do. And, you know, I think there's dumb dads who are like, oh, that's pot. So just to be gender equality here.
It's a generational thing.
Like,
you
it is.
You definitely have seen, like, as, you know, the millennials have gotten older, like literally, like, the voting has changed.
And
it's gone up drastically in 10 years.
I'm no saint in this, but I literally try to, like, let the guests really pound it home because I think I am representing the average person's thought, like, who doesn't pay attention to this stuff.
Right.
Their concerns with it. And so I bring it up and let them just sort of beat me down, because then you can be like, oh my God, like, that's legit. Like, he made a joke out of it, and this guy just kept droning on for 32 minutes and crushed it. So interesting. That's a good observation.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting when we can start to, like, use California, Washington, Colorado as case studies for how much money is actually being put back into local economies from the market. Like, it's over, what, $50 million in Colorado that's been able to be infused back into the educational system.
Yeah, it's a pretty big number.
Yeah, when you start to, like, bring it back down to brass tacks, it really is.
Which is why it will be legalized. I don't see any way. I mean, I know the Republicans are stupid, but it's money. At the end of the day, like, money always wins at some point. Like, morals go out the window when the check gets big. Add a couple commas and this whole thing is done.
That's exactly, it's going to be, the industry is moving so far. Like, you wouldn't see a business like iHeartJane unless it was, the bubble's about to actually burst.
Yeah, sure. No, I agree. This is
a
good show.
I wonder which bank will be first in line.
Bank of America, of course.
You think so?
Well, they're our sponsor, so yeah.
Yay, Bank of America. Go do it.
You should definitely involve yourself in cannabis. Beth, thank you very much for taking the time and joining us on the show once again. Where do people keep up with what you're doing?
You know,
everywhere.
At Beth Bond, Twitter. I'm mostly LinkedIn posting over there, so just go to LinkedIn. Who knows?
Which we heard you liked one of Bob Coyne's posts, and he was very thankful for it.
Yay, WGM people. They're the best.
Such a homer. You can, of course, follow me and Technori at Technori, or at Katoon on Twitter and Facebook. You can catch this episode and many, many, many more on technori.com. Beth, thank you very much for coming in. Sam, thank you for coming in.
I'll see you later.
I'm sorry you didn't get a chance to sleep on your thoughts this time, but, you know, I'll let that off the hook at some point. Anyway, you can catch this episode more at technori.com. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Boom, that's a wrap.